So welcome in our first guest, Mr. Mike Jacobson. How are you doing this morning, sir?
I feel fine, thank you.
Great to have you in here on this Monday morning. Anything to recap from last week before we get started on the what's coming this week?
Well, I think as you know, we debated the brand bill last week, LB 646. It was an interesting discussion. I guess the best way to assess it is you have essentially the feed yards versus the cow-calf producer is the best way to sum up the bill. In Nebraska, there's a line that runs diagonally that includes in the brand that delineates where the brand line is at. If you live west of the line, you're in the brand inspection area. If you live east of the line, you're not in the brand inspection area. And it's not even a third. It's probably less than a third of the state that's not in the brand inspection area. So the reason that was set up that way back in 1941 was so that most of the feed yards were located, and they were very small at that time, in the eastern part of the state. But the western part of the state is where all the cow-calf operations were at, because that's where primarily the grass was at, the sand hills, and so on. There is a fee that's assessed by the brand committee, which is appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature, that have they can carry guns. They're essentially law enforcement officers who guard against cattle being stolen. This is a big deal in, of course, the Sand Hills, which is a large portion of my district and Senator Storr's district in particular. But you don't have quite the problem in the feed yards, because the feed yards, the cattle are all contained. Mm-hmm. However, there are cattle that can go into feed yards and come out of feed yards that are located within the brand inspection area. That's why they're part of the brand inspection process. So a big part of the bill was really designed to figure out what's the proper fees that should be paid by feed yards, and how should cattle be inspected coming in and out of feed yards. Because obviously, if you had essentially a sanctuary city being the feed yard inside of a brand inspection area, you could hide cattle, and you could, as long as you got them there, you were fine. So that's largely what this came about, is that the feed yards are paying about a third of the budget of the brand inspection committee, or the brand inspectors. If you were to pull them out, you would take out a large portion of the funding. And secondly, if you pulled them out, you're still going to have some kind of guardrails in place in terms of how you inspect cattle that are coming in. One of the questions had to do with, if you have a grow yard, meaning a backgrounding yard, you bring cattle in there, say that backgrounding yard's a couple miles from your feed yard, should you have to inspect those cattle again with no ownership change when they move from the grow yard to the feed yard? Well, I think common sense would probably say you probably do not. But what happens when that grow yard is outside the brand inspection area? Let's say it's, 50 miles away, and it's outside the brand inspection area, and you bring these cattle in and bring them in the feed yard, should they be inspected? As some would say that they really should, but it is not included in the bill. That's what the debate was last week, and I think the Nebraska Cattlemen Association was opposed to the bill originally, then bringing amendments that would kind of reduce or increase some of the surveillance came in, but it never completely closed the loop. Their board met by Zoom the day that the bill was heard, and they came out in support. That would be the Nebraska Cattlemen Farm Bureau remained opposed, and the other cattlemen committee, the other cattlemen group remained opposed, and the brand committee remained opposed. So I was getting calls from my constituents that are cow-calf producers that are adamantly opposed, amended or otherwise. So my position has been, that I will oppose the bill. And I think many of them would like to just leave it the way it is. Some, I think, would be open to making subtle changes and perhaps reducing but not eliminating the fee. And that seems to be a pretty good direction to go. But we started so far away from an agreement and asking for the world in the original bill that I think everyone's kind of caught up with the original bill. And I'm not sure you can communicate any changes timely enough to get people supporting a bill this year. So I don't know. It did pass first round, but it passed because there were a number of members that in the legislature who were present, not voting. I think when it first when the vote first went up, it was it was a couple of votes short of moving to the next round. And then there were a couple of late switches from present not voting to support just to get it to the next round. Whether the speaker schedules it for second round debate remains to be seen. But suffice it to say, I don't think we can change it enough this year to really get my support. I'm just hearing from too many constituents that they don't like the bill. And that at the end of the day, that's who I'm working for.
State Senator Mike Jacobs here joining us on a Monday morning as we talk feedlots, which is very impactful for our area, not only our area, but the entire state. Sounds like something that, if it's not going to get done right, you're against it, at least to this point, and hopefully for next year then get something worked out.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think that really when you look at the fee that they're opposed to is the $1 per one-time capacity. And then there are also some inspection fees a part of it. If you look at a feed yard, if you pay a $1 per head one-time capacity fee, meaning you have a 50,000-head feed yard, you pay $50,000. But keep in mind that you'll generally turn cattle through that feed yard 2.5 times a year. So effectively, the fee per head is about 40 cents. So, and you say, well, that's a 40 cent fee that they don't have to pay in the eastern side of the line. And that would be true. But why are all the feed yards locating, including the largest feed yard in Nebraska and in the region, is Black Shirt Feeders, who just opened with 50,000 head, but they're going to grow it to 150,000 head, be the largest feed yard around. Why did they choose to build their feed yard in the brand inspection area, south on down south of North Platte, between North Platte and the Kansas border? Well, one reason feed yards locate in the western part of the state is, number one, our climate. Our summers don't get as hot and our winters don't get as cold because we have lower humidity. Number two, we have less dense population, so you can build a large feed yard and not really have problems with neighbors complaining about the odor. Number three, you're near grain, plenty of corn. You're near ethanol plants that are producing distillers grains. And you're near packing plants. And the other piece of it is, generally speaking, you're locating with lighter soils, meaning they're sandier soils, and you don't have the mud problems that you do in the eastern part of the state when it rains in the spring, and you have wet periods in the spring, not this one, but most springs. You can find your cattle out in the feed yard up to their knees in mud. Well, they tend not to gain very well when they're using all that energy just to move around. So I would argue that the returns are better. You get better gains. You better get better conversion. It's just a better place to raise, to grow cattle in the western half, the two-thirds of the state, than in the eastern. And so you more than offset the cost of the brand inspection fees. And in fact, I doubt if Black Shirt Feeders even considered the brand inspection fee, because they scoped out where they wanted to locate their feed yard, and they located it in an ideal area. And you wouldn't build a feed yard that large if you couldn't be in that area. I would also tell you that you could go to eastern Colorado and build a feed yard there, as many have done. But the problem in eastern Colorado is, where do you get the water? Okay, we also have water in the western part of the state. But when you go across the line into Colorado, you got so many water restrictions that probably at some point you're not going to have water, and those feed yards may have to close because the water is going to be devoted to people. So if you're going to build a big feed yard, probably the best place in the United States to really grow cattle is in western Nebraska. And so I think that industry is an important industry. It will continue in western Nebraska because of those factors.
State Senator Mike Jacobson talking with us here on this Monday morning. Any other topics from last week, or are we looking ahead to preview this week?
Well, I would tell you that last week we did have a day of a general file, so I've got eight bills, so I've got eight bills that have passed the finish line now and either been signed by the governor, but at least have passed final reading and will be signed by the governor over the weekend. So I feel good about that. I've got a couple of bills that'll be coming up this week. And those are really the last of the bills that I've introduced this year. So I'm very happy with the movement of those bills. I did introduce and read on general file this past week my cryptocurrency bill, and it sailed through. And really, we didn't have a lot of everyone on the floor, but it was we did have no one was opposed to the bill, and all yes votes and some present not voting, and that was because there were people that were checked in and weren't on the floor at the time of the vote, so they were recorded as present not voting. So that should continue to sail through on the next two rounds. General file is when every bill really gets its test, and you know where the body's at. And so if it's going to be filibustered or if it's going to have opposition, it happens on general file. This next week, we will be talking about winner take all. I've gotten several emails on that bill. I would tell you that Nebraska is one of two states that do not have winner-take-all. And again, winner-take-all means that during the presidential election, we've got three congressional districts. But if the majority of the state votes for one party or the other for president, all three congressional delegation, all three electoral votes from the congressional districts go to the winner in the presidential race. So keep in mind, Nebraska has five electoral votes, one for each state senator, and then one for each of the three congressional delegates. So there's five up in the air. They refer to the blue dot in Omaha's second district because our second congressional district historically has voted Democrat. And so if the majority in the district vote for the Democrat for president, then they would get the electoral vote under the current regime. If we have winner take all, then whoever gets the most votes for president statewide gets all five electoral votes. So like I said, and in 50 states, it operates with winner take all. Maine and Nebraska are the two states that in Maine, it's a blue state, so right now there's a red dot, if you will, meaning that there's one congressional district in Maine that votes Republican, and in Nebraska there's one congressional district that tends to vote Democrat, and so the two kind of cancel each other out. Mm-hmm. And I think many in Maine, I think they have indicated that if Nebraska would change, that they would too. But then it would be consistent across the country. So I've gotten a lot of emails on that, particularly in Omaha. I get a few Democrat emails from across the state, and there are a few people that at least tell me that they're Republican and think it should be left the way it is. I don't know whether Republicans or not, but I think the angle there is that more money gets spent in the presidential campaign if that one district is in play, and that would be the one reason why you would leave it. So I would tell you that I don't think the votes are there. This will pretty much divide down party lines in the legislature. So if you're a Democrat, you're going to vote to keep it the way it is. Most of the Republicans will vote to go winner take all. There are two Republicans that have openly said that they would not vote for it, and you're going to need both those votes to pass it. And so so I think it'll fall one or two votes short of passing. But it is up on Tuesday, tomorrow afternoon, starting at 1:30. So we'll get to a vote tomorrow evening on first round. And if it dies on first round, then it will be gone for the year. So we'll see where that goes. The rest of the week, I think, I don't know what the governor or what the speaker plans to schedule, but I think he's now going through priority bills, and this bill, winner take all, is a priority bill, and so that's why it's being debated on Tuesday. So we won't know for sure what the rest of the week will be, but we'll generally the speaker schedules after adjournment the previous day.
You mentioned that Maine would as indicated, they would maybe follow suit. Is there a push right now in this Maine state legislature to, like there is in Nebraska, to make the change?
I don't think there's a push to make the change. I think they're probably just thinking that they will.
They don't want to be the last one.
Well, they would be the last one, right. but they don't want to be the only one. I don't think. I think their view is if Nebraska changes, then they would change too, and the numbers, end up not being impacted as to the electoral vote, the one single electoral vote. And this was really big. It was pushed in the special session because it looked like President Trump was going to. It was going to come down maybe to Nebraska's single electoral vote. As it worked out, Trump ended up carrying all the swing states, which wasn't expected, and actually got the majority of the popular vote. So it wouldn't have mattered this year if we had winner take all, but it could in the future.
Very good.
So doing this outside of a presidential election year is preferred.
Sure.
But, and there are two bills. So one bill would be to just outright pass it in the legislature, which is what was done when we used to have winner take all, and then it got changed when Patty Pansy Brooks was in the legislature in the 80s, and so it in the 90s, and so that's how we got to where we are today, was passing it legislatively. There's also a bill to put it to a vote of the people. And put it in the Constitution.
No.
And I don't know that the votes are there to get it on that side of it either. So just spoiler alert, but I don't think the votes are there.
Spoiler alert.
Well, we'll find out then when we talk to you again next Monday. Mr. Jacobson, anything else this morning you want to mention?
Well, I don't know. I think we're going to 4-day weeks now. So we get Monday or Friday off, and sometimes it's Monday and the following are the Friday and the following Monday, so you get a 4-day weekend, which is the case today. So I was back in North Platte over the weekend. I did go to the Ambassador Patron Party, got to go to church, and then we did drive back last night and back in Lincoln again today, and trying to get prepared for the debate tomorrow. So we're probably a couple of weeks away from going to late nights where we will go all day for debate, take an hour and a half off for lunch, and then we'll go and get a half hour off for dinner, and then we'll go into the evening. And those, let's just say that late nights are generally not very productive. I think some of the worst legislation gets past late nights when people are just, you know, I'm tired. I just want to go home. So, yeah.
Very good.
So I don't really have anything else.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Good luck tomorrow and good luck the rest of the week. All right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Take care.